I would like to speak about racism and the mass media, and specifically about racism and the press. To understand this relationship, one has to know also a little bit about racism. And racism, for me, is a system of domination, like sexism. It is a system of domination in which one group is dominating another group. And in order to be able to do that, you need not only a system of domination in the sense of excluding people from your country or excluding people from your organization or from your city, you also have to dominate the minds of the people. And in order to be able to dominate the minds of the people, you have to have control and specific access to public discourse. Because what people have in their minds, prejudices, beliefs in general, knowledge and ideologies, they have to get this particular kind of ideas and these particular kind of ideologies through public discourse, and specifically the public discourse of the press. So one of the main causes of racism is the way the press in Western Europe and also in North America and in general in European-dominated countries has access to the public mind. What I have tried to do in my research since the beginning of the 1980s is analyze systematically how the media report about minorities and how they do so today about refugees, especially in Western Europe, but also in other parts of North and South America. So in order to understand this role of the press, you have to understand also how the structure of news and news articles is organized. And together with my work in discourse analysis on news and the structure of news, I've been investigating for many, many years how racism is produced in society. One of the misconceptions about racism is that people think that it is more like a popular sentiment, a popular idea about immigrants and minorities. But my main thesis after many years of research is that it's not just people in poor neighborhoods who are against minorities and immigrants, but there is a specific role of the elites, because the elites, and especially the elites which are called the symbolic elites, have access to public discourse. They control public discourse, like, for example, education, political discourse, and the media. So if the newspapers report systematically in a negative way about minorities and immigrants, then it is likely that also people who are dependent on that information, like, for example, the last few years about refugees, they build their ideas and their knowledge and also their opinion about immigrants and minorities to the press. So one of the necessary aspects of this research is to systematically analyze how people in the media and especially also in the press talk about minorities. And this happens in many ways, at many levels of discourse, beginning, of course, with the headlines, but also how minorities and immigrants are described at all levels of discourse. So this is not only the question of words, but also, for example, of metaphors, main themes, and so on. So one of the things one observes first is that if you do an analysis of the main topics or themes of news about minorities, most of these themes are actually negative. Negative, for example, beginning with immigration, which is being defined as an invasion of other people in our culture and in our country, and also generally as a threat to our country and a threat to our culture. So that is one of the main things when people actually are arriving. But also once the minorities, refugees, and in our country, there's also another way of defining them in a negative way, for example, as they do not, first of all, adapt to our customs and our language and so on. And so people define others, for example, in terms of another religion, as is typically the case for Islam. So Muslims are first of all defined as different because of different culture and different religion. And women are defined as religious because they have an hijab, typically as different from European women. So even when people engage in something which is quite innocent in our culture, let's say, for example, Catholic nuns who also wear something on their heads, that was never seen as a problem. But as soon as Muslim women have one of these things on their head, like an hijab, it is being defined in a negative way. So one of the first things is that the dominant themes in the press about immigrants and minorities, refugees, is negative. That's one major thing. And these topics, these themes also typically are expressed in headlines. So headlines have a very specific function in the processing and understanding of discourse. They define what is technically called as the macro structure of a text, which in fact influences the way the rest of a discourse and a news article is being defined. What happens in headlines and main topics also happens at the local level, namely at the level of words, how people are actually being described in text. So one of the things one notices is, for example, that minorities and refugees very often are defined in terms of illegality. One of the typical things one has observed in many studies is that they are described as being illegal, as being actually some kind of criminals. So that's at the level of words. Another typical way of defining immigrants as negative is by metaphors. Metaphors have an incredible influence according to new theories of metaphors in linguistics on our mind. Metaphors are not just a nice way of saying things or an interesting way of things like, for example, in classical rhetoric, but today metaphors are seen as way of thinking. And for example, one of the interesting things is that when large numbers of immigrants are coming to our country and to Europe in general, this kind of arrival is being described in terms of metaphors like, for example, waves. Immigrants don't arrive in airplanes or in boats. They typically arrive in waves. There are talked about waves of immigrants. And why is this such a powerful metaphor? Because waves have an association in the mind as something which is dangerous, something in which you can actually drown. So at all levels of discourse, headlines, words, metaphors, ways of describing people, the people who are being cited, for example, in news, it's also important whose opinion actually are being cited. And what happens is that, for example, immigrants or minorities or refugees themselves virtually never speak. And if they speak, they never speak alone. The opinions about immigrants and minorities or refugees are typically formulated and asked from elites. For example, our own lawyers or our own politicians and so on. But the immigrants themselves virtually, and not even the leaders of immigrant groups, they hardly have in this way access to the minds of people. So that's very important. So at all levels of the acquisition of information, whom journalists are going to ask. They are not interviewing first the minorities or the refugees themselves. They always first go to elite sources. They're going to ask politicians or lawyers or the police and so on. So this is also the kind of opinion which is dominant in the press. At all these levels of the acquisition of news, in the opinion articles being published in the press, the editorials, practically all these discourses and different discourses in the media are written by our own elites. And this does not mean that all these elites are, let's say, racist, but if they only have once in a while someone who has lots of influence, like, for example, a cabinet minister, a prime minister, and so on, and which happens in many countries, if they say something negative about immigrants and minorities or refugees, this has an enormous potential of influence because it reaches, in principle, millions of people, as we have seen recently in the last few weeks and months with Trump, when he is talking about immigration and when he's talking about building a wall with Mexico. The whole world is listening to this particular kind of opinions. And when people, for example, are losing their job and they have no real economic explanation of that particular situation, it is very easy for them to blame minorities or immigrants or refugees, and that is exactly what Trump has been doing. All these aspects of the media, I think, contribute to the way people in Western Europe and North America, and in general in European-dominated countries. Also, I just come back from Rio, where I lived 2 years. The same thing happens in Latin America, in Brazil. The elites have control over the mass media, and it's also in this way how the elites have indirect access and control over the minds and the opinions and the ideologies of the people. And therefore, the media have a specific and very powerful role in the reproduction of racism in society. There is also, I'm glad to say, a form of counterpower. The media, the mass media today, are not the only media through which people form their minds, and especially for younger people in many countries. There is also the alternative media of social media, Facebook, and many others. What in the press was practically impossible that younger people have access, or for example, organizations like SOS Racisme in France or in Catalonia, happily they have more access to the media, to the mass mind, for example, through Facebook and other social media. So today we can say that through the ways the media are being accounted for and how media also are known through the internet has an enormous amount of counterpower. So one of the projects I would like to continue is not only how in the last 20 or 30 years the media, especially the press, have played an enormous role in the reproduction of racism in society, but today I would also be much more interested in the way racism can be resisted through the media. And since the mass media hardly do this because they have this idea that the media can only be sold when most of the people like these ideas, happily we can say that through the alternative media, young people and organizations, anti-racist organizations, anti-racist people, are able to counter-formulate in many, many ways all other beliefs to provide correct information about immigration and also to advocate alternative ideologies, which are not dominant ideologies of racism, but fundamental ideas of anti-racism, of solidarity, of equality, and basic norms of democracy, which they can propagate through alternative media. Another fundamental role of the alternative media is that they give much more voice to immigrant and minority organizations and people themselves, which in principle, practically, they never have through the official press. So to give voice to minority organizations and refugee organizations is one of the fundamental functions of the alternative media. Then the alternative media also have a role in voicing alternative elites. For example, whether alternative elites, let's say Noam Chomsky, people who are very famous, who have much less access to the official press, they are being interviewed and approached by people in alternative media. And in this way, interviews with these people also get around and being listened to and viewed by many other people. If you want to change racism in the country, you first have to start at the top. You have to start with the elites themselves. Very often, the idea is that you have to change first at the bottom. At the bottom, you have resistance. You have resistance, as happens, for example, in the United States, when black people are being targeted specifically by the police. They will resist in many, many ways. There will be organizations, there will be resistance, there will be many ways official acts and discourses being resisted. That is fundamental, as was the case in the civil rights movement in the 1960s. This civil rights movement would not have taken place if not minorities themselves, beginning with Martin Luther King, of course, and many others, would have resisted, and not when only the dominant elites have changed. But today, not only it is crucial that the minorities themselves and the refugees themselves get organized in all kinds of ways through the alternative media, but especially also when at the top of the country, beginning with prime ministers and presidents, at the top of the media, beginning with the directors of newspapers, at the top of the the country, for example, in education, in corporate businesses, it is crucial that always the elites give the good example. To finish this kind of discourse and analytical theory of the media, we have to know much more about how discourse functions. And in the traditional way, we had, for example, in the social sciences, methods like content analysis. Today, in discourse analysis, after 50 years since the 1960s, we have very sophisticated insights into the structures of discourse, how discourse is being construed, how discourse has influence on the ideas, the mental representations of people, how discourse is involved in the production and reproduction of ideologies, how opinions are being formulated and how they are being reproduced through these modern systematic analyses of discourse. And I mentioned some aspects, like, for example, the use of headlines, metaphors, the lexicon, people who are being quoted or not quoted, and many other things. As soon as we know much more about these sometimes subtle structures of discourse, we also have more insight into subtle ways discourse, racism in society is produced through this particular kind of dominant discourse of the elites.